Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you.
This is the first of what we hope will be many bonus episodes in 2020. It highlights one of the most talked about sessions at our Meta Strategy Summit in 2019, a debate on blockchain led by Meta Strategy's own Stephen Norton, the co-head of CIO Networks Research and Media at Meta Strategy, who joins me now. Stephen, welcome to Technovation.
Great to be here, Peter.
Stephen, let's talk a little bit about this conversation that you led, a really interesting one. Blockchain is one of these topics that is in the minds of a lot of organizations. It's gone through several phases of the hype cycle. There are people that are rabid optimists and believe this to be an important strategic weapon in their arsenal. There are others who believe the air is coming out of the tires of the topic. Talk a bit about why you thought this was an interesting topic to cover at our conference.
Sure. So we knew that we wanted to do a panel on blockchain, much for the reason that you just mentioned. It's a pretty divisive one. You have some people saying that it's the third wave of the internet, and then other people saying it's nothing more than a glorified database. And so we were thinking about how we might be able to have that conversation. And what we struck upon was having an optimist view and a pessimist view. So having two people come in who could really give us the it's going to change the world perspective, and then someone who could give us the it's not going to change anything perspective.
That's great. And the two people who joined you on stage were Ed McLaughlin, the president of operations and technology at MasterCard, and Neil Sample, who went from chief information officer to chief operating officer at Express Scripts and now carries the CIO title at Northwestern Mutual, but has a much broader purview than the typical CIO, actually akin to his role at Express Scripts. Talk a bit about those two executives who joined you on stage.
Sure. So Ed has been at MasterCard for a while now, and they are obviously a huge player in the payment space. And they've been exploring blockchain technology for quite some time and at quite a bit of depth. They've started to develop some use cases around proof of provenance, also looking at cross-border payments, and even have a number of patents related to blockchain technology itself. And so we thought that Ed would be a great person to come in as our blockchain optimist because they're doing so much key work in the development of the technology. And then Neil, we decided on to be our blockchain pessimist for the day because he's a database guy through and through. He taught database design at Stanford. He worked on the Hadoop system at Yahoo. And one of the things that I thought was really funny during our discussion, he sort of built an imaginary flow chart that started with, do you need blockchain? And then drew an arrow to the word no. So we knew at that point that he would be a great pessimist for our talk.
That's great. One of the things I found so great was the chemistry between the three of you. I thought it was a great conversation, a lot of levity. Although we did have like parts, as you describe, an optimist and a pessimist, there were times where they were kind of almost switching perspectives or, you know, agreeing to meet in the middle at some points. And as you describe, the two of them are real bright lights in the technology landscape. Ed, actually, as you know, a Forbes CIO Innovation Award winner based upon their leveraging, that is MasterCard's leveraging artificial intelligence to enhance fraud detection, and in the process actually leading to dramatic improvements in increased revenue through greater customer acquisition. You already talked a bit about Neil's background as a PhD at Stanford, as somebody who's been in tech-centric digital native organizations like Yahoo and eBay, also the former group president of enterprise growth at American Express before joining Express Scripts and the rise I described a moment ago there. No doubt, I think this really was a fun conversation in addition to being a really enlightening conversation. And so without any further ado, why don't we go to that conversation?
Ed, Neil, thank you both for joining us. At the top of the show this morning, we talked about how blockchain is a bit divisive. You have folks who see it as the future of the internet or the next best thing since the internet, and other people who say it's the most hyped thing they've ever heard. So we thought it would be nice to get an optimist and a pessimist on stage today to sort of share their thoughts and do a little point-counterpoint here. So Ed today is going to be our optimist. He is the president of operations and technology at MasterCard. So Ed, let's start with you. MasterCard has many blockchain patents, and you actually have some some applications that are in production at MasterCard. So I'd love to know, what is the source of that optimism, and kind of when did you know?
Well, a little bit of a step, because we talked about this earlier. I think it's congenitally impossible for me to be a pessimist, right? So I consider myself more a highly skeptical and jaded enthusiast. How's that one?
Fair enough.
Rather than necessarily an optimist for this. So a couple really important things, and I think you've already done. I think it's essential that you separate blockchain as a technology from all the crypto madness that's out there, and I'm happy to go deep on that one. But I think you have a fundamentally interesting and in some ways very novel technology that's now available to us. So the question you have to ask yourself is, what's hard? You know, what's always been hard, and could this help you with something that's hard? Does it make something profoundly cheaper? Right. And Ajay Agarwal's, you know, version of machine learning. It's cheap prediction. What do cheap predictions do? I can tell you it's revolutionized things like fraud monitoring. So are there hard problems that this is making fundamentally cheaper? And one of the hardest problems we have is establishing trust. How do counterparties agree to something? And often it requires central authority. In many ways, MasterCard operates as a central authority to both establish trust and establish and verify agreement. And now you have, and you can call it a distributed Paxos or whatever you want, you have an environment that's designed for people who don't trust each other to be able to do things. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. I think second thing, the idea of you can create a truly atomic and purely digital object and all agree on ownership or holding of it, sort of the digital equivalent of a bearer bond, can also solve things which are hard to do or couldn't have been solved before. And then there's a little bit, or maybe a lot of a bit, of a distributed ledger with interesting characteristics of immutability that adds to resilience. And I'll be the first to say that resilience in many ways is intentional inefficiency. So what could be a negative can also be a benefit for certain things that you're trying to solve for. So I take a step back and say blockchain as a general purpose technology, which has a very interesting set of unique characteristics, is a fundamentally interesting, and I would posit a fundamentally useful thing. I think the question of when you want to invoke a blockchain, you want to say, is it uniquely qualified to solve for this thing? And if so, there's real benefit there.
Interesting. Neil, who I failed to mention, was a debate champion.
You failed to mention that when you signed me up for this thing.
Do you have a different view?
Well, that's clearly what I'm getting paid for today. And I'm literally getting paid in coffee, so it's not going to be...
No, you literally took the other group's coffee.
Oh, I did. I stole someone's coffee. That's true. So I'm efficient. They shouldn't have trusted me. Needed a blockchain on that coffee, which maybe tells you where I'm going to come from. So I come at it from a different perspective, just purely as a technologist. And we may agree on something in a second. But I contend that the more you know about the blockchain, the less relevant it is to everything. And so, you know, in my own history, I used to teach database design at Stanford, which was before I, you know, took on management stuff. Was big in the semi-structured data management space, had a startup that we ultimately sold to HP that has an algorithm that's now featured in Donald Knuth's Art of Computer Science, Volume 3, is literally the most efficient way to encode and encrypt data. And one of the big things that came out of our team at Yahoo, you've probably heard of, which is, it's called Hadoop. It has something to do with data. Like, I've been around these things called databases forever. And I think, and here's the big hairy claim, is that if you have any problem within your enterprise that you're thinking that, you know, the blockchain is the perfect solution for, you're doing something wrong. That there's already a better technology out there, and probably has been for millennia. Right? When I think about the first blockchain, I imagine a couple of monks sitting around and they've got a scroll and they've got, you know, all this recorded knowledge on it. And one of the monks says to the other monks, what if we had a longer scroll? And, you know, they started thinking about, well, what would that mean? Oh, well, that scroll would run out too. And they say, well, we could tape another scroll on the end and just keep rolling. And we could have the entire recorded history, like everything that ever happened on this single scroll. And it was this contiguous log file, which at the end of the day, that's all a blockchain really is it's a structured log file that has these properties. It's immutable, meaning you write once and you don't do any of the other sort of CRUD operations. You don't go back, you don't update, you don't delete records. If you want to change a value, maybe you can do something that feels a little database-y, like you'll rewrite it or you'll transfer ownership or you'll do something. But for those types of problems, and I'm going to say the enterprise problem to narrow the focus for a second, there's literally nothing you would do that there isn't already a better technology for. So if you think about, you want a big log file, you want it to be inviolate, you want it to be replicated, you want it to be, you know, distributed, you want to make some copies, you use multi-version concurrency control that's literally a flag in Oracle. Mm-hmm. And you just keep writing into a table and you do that forever. And the MVCC pattern has existed, you know, IBM's been doing it in ISAM and other technologies for about 60 years. Right. And so the reason, though, that people aren't deploying them everywhere is that they're not actually that good for a broad set of problems. There are a set of problems for which it applies to the enterprise. So, again, my contention is if you come up with an enterprise use case, one that's sort of bounded by a single enterprise, maybe it's for efficiency, maybe it's for back office, maybe it's, you know, Tesco markets their blockchain chicken, right? Yeah. Literally, like that's how big the hype cycle
it's
has gotten.
Delicious.
It is. And it turns out it actually sells better than the non-blockchain chicken, because when they say blockchain chicken, they actually mean there's a QR code on the chicken and people can come in and say, oh my gosh, this chicken came from 13 miles from here and somebody might have said it was organic, it sells better than the other chicken, but that's as much blockchain chicken as I am, right? Like it's a little bit of a stretch to say their enterprise is really making a lot of value from blockchain, because again, they could have used a database for that. It didn't need to be blockchain. So for the enterprise, there is, again, I got to be a little provocative because I have free coffee. There is not a single use case for which it is not a suboptimal solution.
Right. And so the use case really does start to matter when you're thinking about where this might be deployed. And Ed, I want to turn it back to you because I don't want to paint you as a blanket blockchain optimist.
Right.
And we were talking a little bit about...
I want to paint him as... blockchain's for everything.
I'm on your freaking side. Debate champion. I'm obviously... Yeah.
Blockchain's for HR. Yeah, blockchain's for finance.
And we talked a little bit about virtual currency as a use case. And this is where we get into a little bit of the Bitcoin crypto and a little bit of the blockchain. So I'd love to hear what you think about that.
Yeah, and this may put me in the unfortunate position of reinforcing your point, which I just hate to do. But yeah, one of the things we looked at is I think blockchain, for what it is almost, I won't say misapplied. It was solving a unique problem when it was applied to cryptocurrency. How do you not have a centralized authority and allow what many would argue terrible things to occur? But in a unique way, it proves your hypothesis about efficiency. So one of the things we looked at is if you look at a Bitcoin transaction today, estimates is somewhere between 400 to 900 kilowatts per transaction. That's just energy consumption. Use that as a proxy for silicon and everything else that would go along with that. Give me a high middle point, say 670 kilowatts. That would mean a MasterCard transaction today is 1 million times more efficient than a Bitcoin transaction from an energy consumption standpoint. And then when you think about scalability, and it's talking about single-digit TPSs, right? You know, our standard is 50,000 TPS operating at under 50 milliseconds with over 5 nines of reliability. You just don't get that. So the idea that for many cases, there are better and available ways of solving, absolutely, and we do that all the time. But I will turn that around a little bit, is I'll give you a different example. And this may be when it crosses the enterprise. I think definition of enterprise is becoming much more fluid. We have things that we have to do with counterparties, cross-exchange between networks, that regulators are extraordinarily interested in. And for whatever reason, they aren't very trusting people. So the ability to have something where we can give them immediately a validation of what has occurred, that they can review anytime solely within their control, using technologies that are already available and familiar to them, is interesting. It's solving a problem for the enterprise, but it is because it's crossing these trust boundaries that we have to deal with, and you have multiple parties who need to agree on the same thing. Could it be solved with existing database technologies and other things of nature, to your point? Yes, but you also need to have something everyone can agree on, implement, know how to use. That's useful. There is one other bit on the immutability I wanted to ask you about, too, because yes, within your enterprise, you need to trust your systems, right? And you don't have the overhead of establishing trust. But when you say what could be different, the sophistication, the danger, and the risk of being attacked or penetrated from within. And we can talk about zero trust environments and things of that nature, but many people represent in this room. Nation state actors looking to cripple an economy will go after transit, they'll go after power, they'll go after payments. So it may be a fallacy to say the entire internal network can be trusted in any way. And are elements of immutability useful there? Over to you.
See, I'm going to go back to solved that problem in the 60s, right?
More monks?
And so,
is this with monks or
well,
is
no,
this
these are 1960s.
Okay, okay,
just 1960s. Okay, okay. Yeah, probably monks came up with it, right? Like, I think Da Vinci was the first cryptographer, right? He was just literally amazing. But if we wanted to check for immutability, to check to see whether or not something has been altered, we have the CRC that's been around forever, right? Yep. The cyclic redundancy check. It's been whether people know what or not, anytime you use a zip file, it's actually there to make sure that somebody hasn't snuck something in the payload, that they haven't altered it, they haven't put a Trojan in the, you know, cool iPhone app you're expecting to get. And so even there, there are techniques. Now, I'm not saying that this couldn't also do that thing, mm-hmm. But doesn't necessarily do it efficiently, because now you're going to pay for that by also getting distributed consensus, for example. You're going to pay for that by creating a single choke point for your enterprise that's a pipeline that says all transactions must be written to this master block, right? And so in order for something to be there, you know, all has to flow through whatever this is. And it's not to say that you need farms and farms like they have with Bitcoins to compete with one another for proof of work. It's like playing the digital equivalent of lottery. You're doing these crypto games to try to sign a block to earn a Bitcoin to then buy some more hardware to sign more blocks to earn more Bitcoins. Like, that's not how the enterprise is going to work. But the idea that you're going to funnel everything that needs to be immutable, even if it's just a log rollup, into this single point of failure, that can be difficult if you have any meaningful transactional volume.
Right.
If you don't, if you need to write five things down and prove that you know them and you don't really care about the settlement time, that's fine. You know, blockchains oftentimes, you know, at the extreme, Bitcoins write a block basically every 10 minutes. Ethereum writes a block every 15 seconds. That whole 50 milliseconds thing is going to be out.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Completely. But if you're willing to wait and you've got a low transaction environment, then you could, you know, do that thing with the blockchain, but there are other ways to already do that.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of my warning signs come from. And I want to talk a little bit about the patent thing, too, because you triggered that one. So whenever people immediately start saying, well, we'll have to use a permission blockchain, and say, no, that's a database, right? Then you're starting to say the one thing which I think is best suited to solve for, which is environments of untrusted counterparties needing to agree on something. Then once you establish trust, like a MasterCard network starts from trusted counterparties, then you don't need it and it's ridiculous overhead. So you'd only apply it towards things like that. So whenever people start saying, well, it has to be permissioned, it's usually an indication you're solving the wrong problem. Also, when I see things which are a workaround, right? Like, okay, we're going to basically put a caching mechanism in front of it to deal with the fact that it's too slow.
And,
so we're going to batch it up. Yeah, I love the fact that people say, well, we're not batch. It's real time, but we're going
to
use a cache on the back end.
And
I'm like, that's like son of a batch. You know, you just realize it's the same thing. You've only moved it to the other side of the wire.
Well, I like the term mock chain.
Mock chain.
Like
that's
a good one.
Yeah.
Chain only, you know.
Yeah. And that's where I think you really have the enthusiasm run amok, where they're not saying what is unique about this thing. And does this give me a solve I couldn't have before? Is does something like trust become cheaper in a way that it wasn't before? It's I really, really, really want to use it. Or I need to use it to get funded. Or all sorts of other aberrations.
Or my CEO heard of it.
I have to have one of those, and therefore you do it. And I like the point you said. The for our organization, I think for all of your organizations, the more you know about it, right, the more you can understand, does this apply or not, the better filter it can be of whether or not this is useful.
So if you're a CIO or a technology leader who's in the initial stages of this and thinking about it, what's that flow chart of do I need a blockchain for this, yes or no? How do we start to think about that, Neil?
Well, I think the first pattern, no. You go to no. And then there's this box that comes after no, which I call sexy, right? The spontaneous executive input. Because somebody else, and again, oftentimes it will be the CEO or it'll be the board member who reads an article that says, oh my gosh, United Healthcare, they've got a blockchain. Why don't we have a blockchain? And then, you know, you can't go back to the, oftentimes, as we've discussed, to the technical merits. You have to give them an answer in a language that they understand. Now, by the way, I think we'll get to this. I think blockchains are a great way for folks to collaborate sort of between enterprises. Like, if you want to have a shared repository that's not something you depend on operationally, it's not high transaction, and you aren't willing to risk one of your partners who is also a competitor owning the thing, that actually is sort of great. But what happens is invariably it comes from the outside. In our own case at Express Scripts, we had a vendor go and pitch our sales and account management team to tell them that they could win more client accounts if we were able to have a position on blockchain. And then, the sales team says, we have to have a blockchain. Well, what do you want the blockchain to do? I'm not quite sure, but we have to have a blockchain. And so, it is one of those things that there are folks who have opinions on it, that spontaneous executive input, that it's not warranted in anything but literally the hype or the fear, like FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. Our competitors have one. MasterCard has one. So B of A, they have to protect themselves against your patent portfolio by having their own, right? Like there's a fascinating arms race that happens around a technology, even if it's never deployed, maybe it is defensive to keep the trolls from showing up. So you have to start getting some as well. I think the flow chart really kind of strongly goes to no. If it's within the enterprise, if it's within your four walls as an organization, there's a better tool for it. You can just tell them, listen, if this is your business problem, we'll, maybe throw it in Oracle or in a structured log file. If, on the other hand, it crosses the enterprise boundary and you need to trust someone who maybe has different financial interests than yours, who is a competitor, then all of a sudden you can, I think, have a realistic conversation about it. I would start by sort of firing back, probe, figure out what is the use case? What is the problem you're trying to solve? Have you come up with something that no one else has in the last 10 years, which is the intra-enterprise, killer use case for blockchain? Because if they have, fantastic. Get the patent,
right?
Then talk about it, and you're off and running. But to be honest, again, in my limited personal experience, I found more often than not the folks asking for the blockchain are doing it because there's fear of missing out or a competitor is doing it. It's not because they fundamentally get what the blockchain capabilities are and they want to apply it to better solve this business problem. There's a tremendous amount of hype, a tremendous amount of press. Tiny anecdote, we had to spend time with some of our senior executives explaining the difference between blockchain and Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. That's the level of angst. And I was on your side. I was trying to, we had one exec who was really negative about the whole thing because they were like, well, Bitcoin's used for all these terrible transactions and people are buying drugs and yada, yada, yada. And it's like, oh, I don't want to dissuade you. That can be actually true, but you're not addressing the issue of blockchain. Let's talk about the difference. And so, I haven't seen it yet. I have not seen the killer use case. So my diagram goes to no, if it's for the enterprise. And then you can start to, let the air out of the room and talk about what they're trying to accomplish. And usually, you get to a place that's, still no.
Yeah. Well, and the same place you started.
Right. And
I just feel compelled for a follow-on, which is so odious, I'm going to apologize in advance. But I think it is no, but you start with a K no, right? One of the things is you can't tell a board member, you heard about this, it's the hottest thing going in conventional wisdom, and I'm going to explain to you in small words why you're stupid. That never ends well. Right. So that's exactly what we said, is we have to be able to come back demonstrating we have a real expertise with this. Mm-hmm. Right. So we took some people, we said, build a chain. you know, show it's there, allow us to demonstrate it. So our response, we wanted to make sure, came from at least a perception, hopefully not a misperception, of a mastery of the underlying technology, to therefore to try to tune it. To say, okay, we know what this stuff does. We also know what all the other capabilities we have. Oh, this is a high throughput system. Yeah, it's not going to do that. Right? And then I think, again, being in the unfortunate position of agreeing with you, what we found is within the enterprise, if you can't establish trust, you've got deeper problems. Mm-hmm. When you begin crossing those boundaries, and particularly necessary interactions with competitors, or things that are happening with regulators, or things at a national level, those type of things, then it becomes really interesting. So we could have more of a this, not that conversation. How do we sort this problem into the right sort of solution zone? And that's another reason why all the patents, it was an irrefutable way of saying, we got some folks here who actually understand this. Therefore, let's have a different conversation.
Neil, Ed, thank you for being good sports today. With the few minutes that we have left, I wanted to open it up to any audience questions.
So the year is 2040. Yeah, I know.
I'm just trying to figure out how old I am.
You're doing the same.
Am I still alive?
Do I actually care anymore?
Yeah, I'm retired.
Our children will be CIOs, so we're CEOs.
That's right.
The kilowatt hours per transaction has dropped exponentially. Will this technology replace EDI?
Wow.
Listen, yeah, my flowchart just goes to no. So I'm going to...
That's easy. I am struck by that question for an odd reason. One of the first commercial products I had in 1989 was an EDI translator called EDI Edge. I could probably still give the same presentation except the 8mm slides. I don't have anything to run it on. And that's where I think it was Andy Tannenbaum's great line. You know, the great thing about standards is there's so many to choose from. Came out of the EDI industry. So again, I think it's not necessarily having a chain that makes the difference. It's how do counterparties interact with each other? What do they need to do in order to establish trust, in order to have things that come back and forth on this? So will blockchain be the absolute answer for that? I don't know. I actually probably don't think so. But I think what we're seeing today with distributed ledger systems, with how you establish trust and security and this idea of the digital object being its own thing. And so you're not trying to verify the actors. You can actually verify the object bearer bond style. I think that becomes really interesting for EDI-like problems.
Question over here.
So the immutable part to the pessimist of the crew here.
Yeah.
I'm in energy, right? I mean, temperature, pressure, flow, our regulators want to see. You want to keep that, you know, immutable chain. There's some little use case there, isn't there, that you could go for?
No, I really would use, especially in energy, especially when you're going to have this vast sensor network, IoTs that are taking measurements and readings from an environment in real time. You're going to have a ton of data. Just throw it in Oracle. Just turn on.
So you want me to be that capital intensive? And
throw it in MySQL. Get a free database. As you know, because ultimately the capital cost it's going to be de minimis. If you think about it this way, and this is going to be horrifying, the regulator in theory wants everything, right?
Yeah.
That record will grow forever and can't be truncated. You could start over. You could play tricks and not be on a blockchain. You could say, well, let me just copy the last 2 years' data over into a new blockchain and start running again, because that thing just keeps getting bigger and bigger. It rapidly exceeds your processing power. That a lot of the data that you might use right now for real-time decision-making, if you want to create an audit trail for it, this probably isn't an efficient way to do it, much less could you write the data that flows that fast transactionally into such a system without the tricks, without a cache in front of it. Could you, you know, sort of force that round peg into a square hole? Yeah, you could, but again, there are better ways to do it. And there are existing sort of off-the-shelf technologies that have been proven for decades. Oracle's fine. You can use – this is the thing. It's a standard mode. You could download PostgreSDB or Ingress or anything off the shelf, and this actually already exists in there. So, you know, why do it on a blockchain? other than it's slower, it's less reliable. We're not sure how the security works. For example, if you use proof of stake inside the enterprise, is that as good as proof of work? We don't know. And I'll tell you, the horrifying idea for a CISO or a CRO is that you want to deploy this technology for something that's mission critical, even just to auditors later, and you can't attest to the viability of the security model because nobody actually knows. That's a heck of a sell internally to say you want to put something on there that you demand has integrity over time, but you're not, again, mathematically certain that it hasn't been updated or altered by somebody else. I wouldn't stake my career on that from a technology perspective. On the other hand, any of these databases, they're pretty reliable and they work and they have proven security models, audit models. I'm just the skeptic.
fair to say,
you got to play the strength, man.
It's still fair to say it's still early. There's still lots to learn. It will be interesting to see where we are in 2040.
Yeah.
Thank you again, guys.
Hey, thank
for
you.
Joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week when my guest will be Naveen Chadha, a venture capitalist and a managing director at Mayfield Fund.